Brandela, he's not on yet.
All right, thanks, Brandela.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to wait 5 minutes and we'll begin.
Okay.
We shall begin. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chimimcha, Tati, Serra, Alfit Gimel, Yutat Sadi, Kabel Rinat. Amcha sagdenu tahalenu no ra ufre science in tet nun na gibor dor she yehud cha kevavat gamrem nun gimel dalet yud kafshin Barhem Taharem Rachame Sitkacha Samid Gamlem Betetresh Saditav Gimel Hasim Kadosh Berov Tucha Nael Adata Hetkufet Tet Nunayan Yachid Geyeh Lamcha Penei Zohre Kedushatah Yud Gimel Lamed Tei Zayim Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Talumo Shem Kufav Vadi Yud Tah. In the eighth verse of the Anabakoach, we say in a whisper, Work should give out all done. Our class today continues our study of the Book of Prophets. We are starting with the first Book of Prophets, which is known as the Book of Joshua. You'll find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. In the sixth row, the third column from the left. That link opens up to a landing page for all of the parashas that are in the five books of Moses. And we also have some additional items from the Book of Prophets and the Books of Writings. So when the landing page opens up, scroll down to the Book of Joshua under the Books of the Prophets. And we are opening up today to chapter 2. When that opens up, the Book of Joshua commentary for chapter 2, there's a link there to the Mechon Mamre website. When that, the Mechon Mamre website opens up, you'll need to scroll to chapter 2, which is where we will begin our study today. I will say Elishem Yehud. I will read a verse or two or three in Hebrew, and then we will be doing all of chapter 2 in English. And then we will comment on what we will have just read. Does anybody have any questions before I begin? L'shem Yehud Kuchabarichu Ishkinte Bidhilu Urhimud Hilu Uthilu Urhim Leakta L'shem Yudhe Bavav He Beyehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayhino Am Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Konenei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Konenehu. Chapter 2 of the book of Joshua. Vayishlach Yehoshua ben Nun min hashitim Shenayim anashim meraglim keresh lemor Lechu re'u et haaretz ve'et yericho Vayelchu vayavohu Beit Isha Zona Ushmarachav Vaishkevu Shama. And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out of Shittim two spies secretly, saying, Go view the land and Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a harlot, whose name was Rahab, and lay there. The Hebrew does not use the word spies. It doesn't even use the word tourists as we know it uses when Moses sent the 12 spies, one from each tribe. No, the Hebrew word that's being used here is anashim, which is the lowest aspect of men. When I say the lowest aspect, Enosh is a word for man or a men. Enoshim is a word for men in Hebrew. But we also have the name Adam, or the word Adam, that means men. We also have the word Ish in Hebrew that translates as men. What is the difference in the word Enosh from the other two? Enosh was a generation, was the son of Seth, I believe. He was a generation that fell spiritually due to the beginning of idol worshiping the stars. Now, the sages and the Midrash teach us that the two men who were sent were upstanding leaders of the tribes, but that is not implied by the Hebrew. At least that's not my understanding. The second verse. Vaye amar lemelech yericho lemor Hine anashim ba'u Heina halayla mibnei Yisrael Lachpor et haaretz. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, Behold, there came men in hither tonight of the children of Israel to search out the land. the third verse. Vayishlach melech Yericho el Rachav lemor, Hotzi'i ha'anashim habayim elayich, Asher ba'u leveitech, Ki lach oretz kol haaretz ba'u. And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, Bring forth the men that have come to thee, that are entered into thy house, for they are come to search out all the land. Verse 4 in English. And the woman took the two men and hid them. And she said, Yea, the men came unto me, but I knew not where they were. The fifth verse. And it came to pass about the time of the shutting of the gate, when it was dark, that the men went out. Whether the men went, I know not. Pursue after them quickly, for you shall overtake them. The sixth verse. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax, which she had spread out upon the roof. And the men pursued after them the way to the Jordan, until the fords. And as soon as they had pursued after them and were gone out, the gate was shut. And before they were laid down, she came up unto them upon the roof. And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you, when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, unto Sihon and of Tuag, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard it, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more spirit in any man. Because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Verse 12. Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that ye also will deal kindly with my father's house, and give me a true token, and save alive my father and my mother, and my brethren, and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. And the men said unto her, Our life for yours, if ye tell not this our business, then it shall be, when the Lord gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee. Then she let them down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the side of the wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. And she said unto them, Get you to the mountain, lest the pursuers light upon you, and hide yourselves there 3 days, until the pursuers be returned, and afterward may you go your way. And the men said unto her, We will be guiltless of this thine oath, which thou hast made us to swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window, which thou didst let us down by, and thou shalt gather unto thee into the house thy father and thy mother, and thy brethren, and all thy father's household. And it shall be that whoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him. But if thou utter this our business, then we will be guiltless of thine oath, which thou hast made us to swear. Verse 21. And she said, according unto your word, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet line in the window. And they went and came unto the mountain, and abode there 3 days, until the pursuers were returned. And the pursuers sought them throughout all the way, but found them not. Then the two men returned and descended from the mountain, and passed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and they told him all that had befallen them. And they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord has delivered into our hands all the land, and moreover, all the inhabitants of the land do melt away before us. We're now going to look at the commentary on the book of Joshua, starting at chapter 2. The first commentary is something I added. As I've said before, I bring information and commentaries from many different sources, but whenever it's words that I am adding, I make clear that it's coming from me by saying Hanok adds. And what I'm adding is something that I remember from my studies when I had left the Kabbalah Center and I was looking at all the different sources, the Breslovers, the Chabadniks, the Satmers, many different sources of Orthodox Judaism, looking for what was right for me. And in reading what the writings of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, I remember, but I wasn't clearly remembering, that he wrote in his teachings that all of the healing herbs that are known to man are concealed in the words of the book of Joshua, and it's either in chapter 1 or chapter 2, and that's what I don't remember. But Rabbi Nachman said, concealed in one of these chapters is all of the healing herbs that are known to mankind. Continuing to read. Rashi proves from the text that Joshua sent the two spies to Jericho 2 days before he commanded the people to prepare to cross the Jordan. According to tradition, the spies were Caleb, Joshua's companion from when the 12 spies went into Israel, and Pinchas. Thus Joshua, who is Ephraim, works together with Caleb, the royal tribe of Judah, and Pinchas, the priest. Why were they sent to Jericho specifically? Because Jericho was as hard as all the rest of the country put together, because it was on the border. It was the lock of the land of Israel, which was why in the days of Oslo, the slogan was Jericho first. Now, the commentary, the days of Oslo, is referring to the late 1990s when the Palestinian Authority and the modern state of Israel were negotiating, looking to find peace. And they arranged the Oslo Accords, because in the city of Oslo, they came to a set of an agreement of how to give the Palestinians their own land and yet still remain under the authority of the land of the modern state of Israel, until such time as a full peace accord would be reached. And that's what the rabbi who wrote this commentary from Azamra, I believe, that's what he was indicating here. But as I mentioned earlier, based on the word Anashim, to imply that Caleb was at that lowest level of a man, and Pinchas, who had the two righteous souls of Nadab and Abihu, as well as his own three male souls, it would be difficult to call them Anashim. So I have no reconciliation of this idea. Rahav is a great heroine. I am adding, Rahav in Hebrew translates as arrogant, conceited, haughtiness, boastfulness. The gematria of Rahav in Hebrew is 210, and this gematria connects to the energy of Radu, the Hebrew word that translates as going down. And it's used in the book of Genesis describing Abraham went down to Egypt. It indicates a spiritual fall. And this is a spiritual law that one must fall before they rise spiritually. This does not have to happen in the physical world, since the physical world is an illusion. But in all spiritual worlds, in order to rise, one must lose everything that one has at the level that you're on. In order to rise to a higher level, you must lose everything you have acquired at the level you're on. Rahav is celebrated as one of the outstanding converts of all time, together with Hagar, Oznat, Zipporah, Shifra, Puah, Pharaoh's daughter Batya, Ruth, and Yael. This is because Rahav acknowledged that Hashem, your God, is God in heaven above and on the earth below. She alone among the Canaanites was willing to join Israel instead of fighting them, because she recognized the divine hand in their exodus from Egypt, the crossing of the Red Sea, and their complete victory over the kings of the Amorites. Her above-quoted declaration of faith is incorporated in the first paragraph of the Aleinu Lishabeach prayer that is recited at the end of each of the three daily prayer services. And in essence, the Aleinu Lishabeach, that paragraph, that prayer, is an elevator that brings the souls of people who have elevated to the higher worlds. It brings them back down into the physical world with a soft landing. That's why that same prayer is recited in all of the prayer services. Why did Rahab alone draw the right conclusion? Was it because she was lowly and therefore humble? According to the Targum Yonathan, which is a translation of the Hebrew Bible, the Hebrew Torah, into Aramaic, the language of the people, Rahab was an innkeeper. But the Midrash Meshilta is less delicate. She was 10 when the children of Israel went out of Egypt. and practice prostitution for all of the 40 years that they were in the wilderness. There was not a minister or a dignitary that had not been with Rahab. And that was how she knew so intimately that no more spirit stands up in any man in face of you. Rahab was obviously a woman of profound understanding as she drew the right conclusion. More than that, she showed the trait that is the hallmark of Israel, chesed, or kindness, loving kindness. She did not have to save the two spies. She could quite easily have handed them over to the authorities and received a great reward. It was because she showed them pure chesed by saving them without expecting a reward that she felt able to ask them for pure chesed when the children of Israel would conquer Jericho, that they should save her life and that of her family. There was a great tikkun, repair, correction in her letting the spies out through her window in the city wall, and later using the sign of the scarlet thread. Her clients used to use a rope to climb in and out of her window unseen. According to the rabbis, Rahab prayed that the three elements of the wall, the window and the thread, should atone for her neglect of the three mitzvot incumbent upon an Israelite woman: lighting the Shabbat candles, separating challah, and observing the laws of nidah, the family purity laws. The rabbi said that no less than 8 prophets and priests were descended from Rahab, including Jeremiah and Hilkiah and the prophetess Huldah. In their later history, Israel were frequently compared to a whore. Rahab is the outstanding example of such a woman who repented with all her heart and attained the greatest heights. Later on, I'm making an addition at this point. Later on in the book of Joshua, we will learn that Rahab becomes the wife of Joshua. Please note, Joshua chapter 2, 1-24, is read as the Haftorah of Parashat Shlach Lecha, and the Numbers 13, 1-15, and 41 I am adding a commentary about it. This chapter 2 is a Haftorah for the Parasha of Shlach Lecha, which is the story of the spies going into the land and then returning with the Lashon Hara about the land. I am adding, why do you think the sages chose this connection between the essence of the parasha and this haftarah? There can be both a physical and a spiritual explanation. Spiritually, the connection is about certainty. Physically, the connection is about spying out the land. That's the end of chapter 2. We're now going to read chapter 3. Returning to the Mochon Mamre website to read chapter 3. chapter 3, verse 1. And Joshua rose up early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to the Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and they lodged there before they passed over. And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the midst of the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then ye shall remove from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Come not near unto it, that ye may know the way by which you must go, for ye have not passed this way before. And Joshua said to the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And Joshua spoke unto the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant, and pass on before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant, and went before the people. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all of Israel, that they may know that, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. And thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when ye are come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, ye shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, come hither and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Hivite, and the Perizzite, and the Girgashite, and the Amorite, and the Jebusite. If you count the names of the tribes, the names of the nations, you'll find that there are 7. But there were 10 nations living in the land of Canaan. Why do you think only 7 were conquered? Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth passes on before you over the Jordan. Now therefore take you 12 men out of the tribes of Israel, for every tribe a man. And it shall come to pass, when the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, even the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand in one heap. Verse 14. And it came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over the Jordan, the priests that bore the Ark of the Covenant being before the people. And when they that bore the Ark were come unto the Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bore the Ark were dipped in the brink of the water, where the Jordan overflows all its banks all the time of harvest, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up in one heap, a great way off from Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan, and those that went down toward the sea of the Arabah, even the Salton Sea, were wholly cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, while all of Israel passed over on dry ground, until all the nation were passed clean over the Jordan. We returning to the commentary for the book of Joshua for chapter 3. I am adding that there are 17 verses in chapter 3, and this connects to the Hebrew word tov through its gematria. Tov translates as good. What is the essence of goodness? One answer is connecting to the plan of creation. The entry to the land of Israel by the children of Israel is an aspect of the plan of creation and is therefore good. The sea saw and fled. The Jordan turned backwards. This is a verse from Psalm. As we read in the English translation, it's not clear that whether the Jordan River split or the people were transported above the water. But the psalm makes it clear. The waters of the Jordan turned backwards. Continuing to read. Psalm 114 compares the greatness of the miracle of the splitting of the Jordan, enabling the children of Israel to cross easily on dry land into their homeland, to the greatness of the splitting of the Yam Suf, whereby they had been saved from their Egyptian enslavers. Likewise, Joshua, who presided over the splitting of the Jordan, is specifically compared in today's text to Moses, who raised his staff to split the sea. However, it was not his staff that Joshua raised. Instead, he instructed the children of Israel to follow the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth. The Midrash on Psalm 114 asks what it was that the sea saw to make it flee. It answers that the sea saw the ark, the coffin of Joseph being carried up from Egypt. Through the merit of Joseph, who bent and controlled his physical passions in order to serve his maker, God bent nature and caused the sea to part for the children of Israel. Now Joseph's descendant, Joshua, who had learned the Torah from Moses, sent the Ark of the Covenant ahead of his people to teach that God is stronger than nature and can bend it to his will. In the Ark were the tablets of stone and Moses' Sefer Torah. It was necessary for the people to purify themselves to experience this miracle because they were about to enter a new path through which their observance of God's covenant, the Torah, would enable them to transcend natural law. This was one of only three occasions when the ark was carried not by the Levites, but by the Kohanim. The other two occasions were in the siege of Jericho and when the ark was returned from the Philistines. To impress the lesson of this great day upon everyone, in verse 9, Joshua says to the people, "Draw close to me over here." Our rabbis taught that Joshua assembled the entire nation between the poles of the ark, and this was one of the places where the little held the great. Skeptics will wonder how this was possible. Even those who sincerely want to believe often find it hard, if not impossible, to understand and accept that sometimes apparently quite outlandish in rationality defying statements found in the rabbinic midrash. Since this series of study notes on Nach will rely heavily on the teachings of the Talmud and the Midrash, illuminating our biblical texts, let me say at the very outset of the series that the Bible is the word of the living God, revealed to us through his prophets and his sages. As soon as you scratch beneath the surface of the biblical words, you see that they are far from what they appear. D, who can find it? The Bible teaches about the spiritual dimension of the material world in which we live. Since this spiritual dimension is often quite unapparent to those sunk in materialism, the sages of the Midrash and the Talmud, who lovingly counted every single word and letter of the Hebrew text, and who were alert to its every subtle nuance and allusion, developed a unique poetry of allegories and riddles in order to encourage us to jump out of our pre-existing misconceptions about the nature and purpose of the world and rethink everything we thought we knew. This is what we need to do in order to learn and to grow spiritually. I am adding, there are differences in opinion regarding the Midrash and even different levels of Midrash. Midrash is still being written by our current generation. Today's Midrash is considered on a lower level than all the previous Midrashim. The Orthodox tradition teaches that the earliest Midrashim, like the Book of Jasher, or the Sefer Yashar, is written through an anagram of the letters in a set of certain verses. Other Midrashim utilize permutations of the letters of words and verses. In the Orthodox tradition, Midrash is the words of Torah, just slightly less than the writings. In the teachings of the Reform movement, the Midrash are stories. Some think Midrashim are told to children and to fools. Others perceive Midrashim as very deep, intellectual, spiritual, and emotional stories. What are Midrashim? The answer is up to you. It requires one to read some, if not all, of the Midrashim to make an informed decision. This is my opinion. Joshua is bringing the entire nation between the poles of the ark, may be understood as having succeeded in bringing everyone within the bounds of a totally new level of consciousness emanating out of the ark and what it represents, in which they all perceive that God alone rules over everything. The living God alludes Kabbalistically to the Sefirah of Yesod, the covenant. It is precisely this quality of moral purity embodied in Joseph the Tzaddik that would drive out the seven Canaanite nations, who were the physical, the mental, and the ideological klipah, the shells over the covenant, corresponding to the 7 days prior to the circumcision, during which the orla, the foreskin, still hides the holy crown. I am adding, there are 10 Canaanite nations, yet only 7 were defeated by the children of Israel with Hashem's help. Did they wage war on the other 3? We are actually still fighting these battles today in our generation. The greatness of the miracle of the splitting of the Jordan was enhanced because of it was Nisan. It was springtime, when the melting snows of winter made the river so full that it was bursting its banks. It was in the merit of the Israelites having taken control and slaughtered the Paschal Lamb, hinting to Aries, the head of the constellations, on the 10th of Nisan, 40 years earlier, bending the constellations under the will of Hashem, that the new generation witnessed this new, unheard-of miracle of the splitting of a flowing river. The Talmudic discussion of the splitting of the Jordan is contained in Sota 35a double F. Just to further irritate the skeptics, the Talmud states that according to Rabbi Yehuda, when the river split and the flow from the north backed up, it caused a huge cubic pillar of water, 12 by 12 miles large, 12 by 12 miles large, corresponding to the size of the Israelite camp. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon Bar Yochai objected, saying that the pillar was more than 300 miles high, so that all the kings of the east and the west saw it. As it says, when the kings of the Amorites heard, just to increase the mystery, the rabbi said of the city of Adam, mentioned in verse 16, did you ever in your life hear of a city called Adam? No. This alludes to Abraham, the great man, Adam, among giants. It was in Abraham's merit that the miracle took place, because he was the first to bend nature to his will when he circumcised himself. And our final note in chapter 3 is that Joshua, chapter 3, verses 5, 6, and 7, and chapter 5, 2 to 6, chapter 5, verse 2 to chapter 6, verse 1, and then an additional verse of chapter 6, 27. These are read as the Haftarah on the first day of Pesach. That's the end of our class, the end of our study of chapter 2 and chapter 3. Are there any questions? Do you have a question?
No, sir.
I remind you that our two classes today, one at 4:30 West Coast time is a deep Zohar class, and at 7 o'clock is a Tikkuni Zohar class, but I've actually realized it's the holiday of Yom Ha'atzma'ut. It's Independence Day in the land of Israel. And I would be studying the writings tonight of Rabbi Cook, who is explaining what is the spiritual significance of this holiday. Shalom Gadol to all. Have a beautiful afternoon.
Thank you,
Shalom.
Thank you.
Shalom.